RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
I want to welcome Meryl Nass, MD, internal medicine physician and activist with expertise in anthrax and bioterrorism. Her interest is in prevention, investigation, amelioration, and safe and effective medical response. She has raised cogent critiques of, among other things, global vaccine safety issues, medical ethics, and corruption in the medical, industrial, military complex. And we've had Meryl on a number of times already here at RCR. There's more to her bio, but we'll just burn up the time. We want to chat to her about the reason we are having Meryl on again. And that is the op-ed that we talked about earlier on in the week by Professor David Murdoch and Ashley Bloomfield, arguing that pandemics should be treated as security threats rather than public health threats. And Meryl is with us now. Meryl, welcome back to RCR. So from public health threat to security threat, it's gone up a notch, it seems, or maybe more than one notch if it's getting to security threat.
Or maybe it's gone up in New Zealand. So what happened in the United States is early on in the COVID pandemic, the National Security Council took it over from the health people. And so it was handled as a security, defense, military issue here. And I think the goal is both to raise the profile of this whole biodefense agenda, to get it more money, to get it more attention, to keep everybody scared. And so now, I think for the globalists, the problem is we need enemies. You know, and if New Zealand isn't going to fight any wars, and, you know, when's the last time New Zealand had its own war? So we need an enemy to spend money on, and the designated globalist enemy is going to be pandemics. So we have to raise their profile and make everyone concerned. And governments are used to spending a lot of money on weapons and defense, not so much on pandemics. So the idea is, you know, you replace some of these weapon systems with pandemics and then you can spend that kind of money on them.
But you can also police the population as if it was war, an actual physical war, can't you? You can use the same tools, same levers.
Yeah. So, I mean, one part of the biosecurity agenda is to perform surveillance on everybody, on your pets, on your livestock, on wild animals. We've got to be looking for these deadly viruses all the time, just in case they might escape from the wild. And of course, that's probably the best way to make them escape, is to go looking for them all the time and then working on them in laboratories.
I see a few commonalities between our Dr. Ashley Bloomfield and others who have been in this space. Not so much David Murdoch, who's relatively unknown to the public, but Dr. Ashley Bloomfield certainly ended up being one of these celebrity public health officials like Anthony Fauci. And there have been a few others around the world. We've all had a kind of own version of the celebrity public health official, you know, like it's a typecast role or something, you know.
Exactly. So what I noticed was Christian Drosten in Germany had been cast in that role as well, as somebody to look up to, somebody who was sexy, someone who you could trust. And even in my state, I guess the state public health officials said that they brought in a fellow at the beginning of the pandemic or right at the start who had been actually got in trouble in Illinois for covering up a small epidemic of, what's it called, Legionnaire's disease, and brought him to Maine, tried him out with COVID. He became a very effective spokesperson. He was a doctor lawyer, and now he is the chief deputy at the CDC. So now he is basically, you know, making policy or they don't trot him out in front of the public so much now. They leave that to these women that they hired to be the CDC director. The last one didn't even live in Atlanta where the CDC was. But basically, yes. So that's four different public health officials for whom a persona was created to help us comply with their suggestions.
We even had comments here at the time, and I don't know how you'd reach this conclusion, that he was sexy. The people were kind of conflating all these celebrity buzzwords that you'd get for, you know, Hollywood people and that sort of stuff,
yes,
applying it to someone who obviously wasn't that.
Right, exactly. I mean, as Fauci, but, you know, sexiest man alive was a moniker attributed, you know, laid on Fauci. And so this was clearly a plan that we want to give these people as much cachet as we can. And that is one way to do it, at least perhaps, you know, with the TikTok generation.
Would it surprise you to know that when it came to fluoridation, Bloomfield, as the Director General of Health, who was about to step out of that position, signed off fluoridation of water supplies around our country, overriding the Bill of Rights legislation, which should guard against, well, government overreach, mass medication in the water supply. So, you know, the sexy celebrity public health official ignored basic human rights. So, you know, again, not a hero.
No, absolutely. I mean, these people get drunk on their own power and start believing, you know, the myths about themselves. And that was clearly true of Fauci and Christian Drosten, who had actually gotten in trouble. People say his PhD wasn't correct, and he may not have a PhD as claimed. So Ashley Bloomfield has been wandering around. He had done such a good job of shutting down New Zealand and enforcing his edicts during the pandemic, even though he didn't actually wind up saving any lives. He did manage to shut down the economy. So he did that so well, they brought him to Geneva to use him to help coerce the rest of the world to go along with the WHO's pandemic planning agenda. And he spent 2 years working on that in Geneva. And now he's back in New Zealand trying to find his way. What is his reward now that he's, you know, damaged New Zealand and attempted to damage the world, to put it under what he did? He was one of the two chief negotiators for amendments to the international health regulations, which would have, had they been accepted in their entirety as proposed by WHO, would have given the director general of WHO, who isn't even a doctor, the right to declare pandemics whenever he wanted, with no standards, and then tell the world what they could and could not do about them. So this is what Ashley spent the last couple of years trying to, you know, accomplish. And fortunately, almost all of it got thrown by the wayside. And they finally managed to eke a little bit over the finish line on June 1st, and then he was done at the WHO, at least for the time being. As you know, Helen Clark has been going back and forth, you know, making a career of being a globalist. So I guess he's hoping to follow in her footsteps.
We seem to do it quite well down here. We punch above our weight when it comes to that. Given that this seems to be a contrived sort of character, and it's repeated in other countries that we've just talked about, other characters, can we be even sure that he actually had anything to do with writing this op-ed?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm not at all sure, because when you read it, it's clearly a tone-deaf document. It's saying we need, on the one hand, it's pretending that nations are going to have the right to make all their own decisions during a pandemic, and that what we need are really good decision makers and a structure and exercises and a plan and constant planning over and over and over again so that New Zealand can make the best decisions possible. On the other hand, what happened when Ashley Bloomfield was the director of health? He followed the globalist agenda to a T. He did everything they wanted. He made none of his own decisions. So why would he, you know, write such a document? Or was he just told to put his name on it? And the purpose was to try to get more money for pandemic planning, to try to move it up to a national security issue, and to rewrite history. Because that's the other thing the document does, is give you a completely different history of what happened during the pandemic.
And there's that assumption all along that there will be another pandemic. And plenty of people, including yourself, I'm sure, that we've spoken to have said these are quite rare things.
Yes, exactly.
To get to the benchmark or the bar of being a pandemic is a very high one globally anyway. But the talk is like, oh, well, you know, there are a whole lot lurking there right now. You know, get ready for a stream of incoming. Even that stretches credibility, doesn't it? Big time.
Yes. And as I said, Australian David Bell and a group from Leeds University in the UK actually studied all the pandemics for over 100 years in the world and looked at what impact they had in terms of global public health. And there was very little impact. Most of them were very small, or they were large and minor. So they were small and significant or large and minor. And overall, really the 1918 flu was the big one, which did kill several million people worldwide, was noticed by everyone. But there were only three pandemics in the entirety of the 20th century. The other two were barely noticed. They're both influenzas. And yet here in the 21st century, we've had the directors general of the WHO declare 8, possibly 9 different pandemics in only 24 years.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious the change there. Okay.
Well, the idea is, you see, but that's because they're trying to get a lot of, once they declare, so right now, the WHO director general has the power to declare one, but he doesn't have the power to tell us what to do when he declares one. But that was clearly, you know, in the plan years ago, even before Tedros became the director general. So these DGs were encouraged to just start declaring them. And then, you know, we get people revved up and worried. Then we add powers to the director general. So every time he declares one, he can take over and manage the world. And that was what Ashley Bloomfield was trying to accomplish the last few years.
When he was working there, yeah, in Geneva. And also making it a security threat. That, like I mentioned before, takes it to as if it was like a physical war.
Yes.
You can do overreach then, can't you? You can lock people down. You can arrest people in the street. You can basically do anything, can't you? It's a martial law, potentially.
Exactly. And as we know, last time with the COVID pandemic, all the old planning and rules were thrown out the window.
Yeah.
And a whole new set of responses was imposed around the world.
So I'm wondering if we were to put a question to Ashley Bloomfield right now, the first one would be, did you actually write that?
Yes. And if
you did, from there.
And if you did, perhaps we can get you for lying. You know, as a public official, are you allowed to lie about the past?
Well, he must know. You can't be that self-deluded, can you? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, I think he just does what he's told.
Right. And gets paid well.
I assume he does. But, I mean, once you're the director general of, or whatever it's called in New Zealand, of health, what do you do next? You know, where do you go from here?
WHO, Geneva. Because they know you're a good boy.
Yes. So now he's been sent back to New Zealand. What can he do? I guess maybe he has to be more of a good boy and maybe he'll be able to go back to Geneva again.
We've heard, and I don't know the organization, but he's involved in some organization that promotes mindfulness.
You're kidding.
No.
That's hysterical.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll find out more about that, but that was a headline the other day. Okay, kind of know where you're coming from on that, Meryl. Thanks for coming in again.
Thank you. Take care.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.